NBA basketball fans, welcome back to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss everything revolving around the NBA playoffs. Obviously, the game just ended. We have another series tied up 2-2 now to go along with the Dallas and Clippers series. Last night, that was a crazy game. Of course, we got to get into that. So we're going to break down all this stuff. Later tonight, in a couple hours, we do have the Lakers-Portland game 4. That's a pivotal one, obviously. We'll break that down, preview it. We'll also, you know, not much to talk about as far as the East goes for obvious reasons, but we will talk about the next rounds because a lot of that is either going to get decided or has been decided, no matter really what happens tonight, I believe, because I think Miami will finish it off anyway. But anyway, we are going to get into it. We'll start, though, the show by breaking down what we just literally saw. Like I said, 2-2, no Westbrook for Houston still, and it's a 2-2 series. So we're gonna break that game down and just kind of look at how fun the Jazz and Nuggets have been, but where has the defense gone for Denver? Just a variety of things. I mean, who would have thought that the lower seeds would produce this much fun stuff? Now, we all pointed to Portland, you know, being the hottest team in the bubble and Lillard just going off. And so we all kind of thought, well, you know, that could be extended because the Lakers have been kind of up and down in the bubble once they, a game or two it took, and then they already clinched. So they were like, screw it. And then they lost two point guards, really, you know, Bradley and Rondo. So we're going to talk about, you know, how this all breaks down. Big game tonight. But, yeah, we're going to get to it in just a second. If this is your first time listening to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast, it streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. However, like I said, if this is your first time listening to it, you don't have to just go to Blog Talk and download it right there or listen to it in the browser. You can find this show under the Ropeadope Radio Podcast at Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Player FM, TuneIn, really across the board. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including Spotify. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. That's thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, it's football, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's everything in between. And one more quick thing, if you're thinking about cutting the cord or you're not quite happy, I got something for you. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. And right now they got some specials going on. There is the 7-day free trial just to see if you like it. But the plans start as low as $55 a month. There's no annual contract, of course. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. And right now you can get HBO Max free trial for 30 days. Also with the AT&T TV Now Max package, that includes HBO plus a free month of Showtime. So that's AT&T TV Now, like I said, live streaming cable. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host and see how he's doing. What's going on, Marshall? How the hell are you on this balmy Monday afternoon here up in Minnesota? What's going on down there in Texas?
Life's not too bad. I've had to take a little bit of a break from my golf career with teaching back. And also, it's been like freaking 98 degrees. Like, I don't mind golfing, but like 97, 98, that's I'm good. I'll come home and watch hockey, basketball, and baseball every night. So I'm not going to complain about that. But yeah, life's not bad. You know, I do live, I believe, probably about a 15-mile drive from where the Dallas Mavericks play. I do believe we'll get to that team here. They're kind of making news. Like, in case you don't know, like, that Luka guy is not too bad for a punk ass white boy. He's playing some pretty good ball, Chris.
So, yeah, I would say if you look at the LeBron and Magic numbers early in the playoffs, early in the playoff career, I should say, it is crazy impressive, man. What were you gonna say though? I kind of cut you off.
No, it's just it's fun watching this kid. I guess I'll be me like my little intro in. It's just it's cool to see superstars grow. And obviously, I mean, you know, he's a name that people have known in the NBA. Like, he's a great scorer. And, you know, but there's not really been a lot of coverage just because the media doesn't really talk about the Mavs. Like, they're not like they're not your regular ABC Sunday afternoon game. You know, the record isn't that flashy. They don't have anyone really besides him, you know, that's like a polarizing figure, like even like a Lance Stephenson or a Beverly or Westbrook. You know, there's not a whole lot to Dallas, but
right. You
now have a guy who, you know, knock on wood, doesn't get hurt, is developing in like in front of our eyes of like, holy shit, this dude's like special. You know, it was fun to watch yesterday. We'll get to that, but it's cool to see, I guess, another budding superstar. You know, for the last couple of years, it's been Kawhi, LeBron, and kind of they've, you know, and the Greek Freak. I think now we're getting to the point, Chris, where, I mean, just from the playoffs itself, it's almost, you almost got to put the name Luka in that sentence, just as an up and coming superstar that could be on the same echelon, because the stuff this kid's doing really is, like, you know, we're talking about the elitist players to do what he's been doing, because these numbers have been just insane.
Yeah, no doubt. And scoring has been insane in these playoffs, individually and team. Now, I know that there's always the different rules, and they do score more points, and they score more threes now. That's great and everything like that. I do understand that. So, for, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm old school, so I understand those analytics. But, you know, Luka, actually, if you look at how he started the year, he was right up there in the MVP talk. And then it's not like his play, I would say his play leveled off to still an elite level and still was better than last year. But like you said, the other ones pushed forward so much, especially Giannis, that it was easy to be like, after the first month and a half or 2 months, it was easy. Because like you said, well, do they really got a chance to win it? Do they really have a chance? I mean, they're still trying to make the playoffs. And so that happens. I mean, it's not just Luka. You know, he's only a second-year guy, too. So that plays into it as well. And I like that sometimes a first year you can just explode, and then it can be like, yeah, you look pretty good your second year, but maybe some of the limitations you have get exploited on tape, and so you kind of work your way through that second or third season, the sophomore jinx or whatever, sometimes that happens. But it has been phenomenal to watch, no doubt about it. And another thing that plays into all this stuff, now that we're in the playoffs, is it's back to being a two-star league. So the level of dominance, just sheer talent in the starting five. Yeah, you can look at some two stars, no doubt, but it's not a three or a four like Golden State. So that kind of levels out some stuff as well. And in the 80s, and especially in the 90s, some teams like Stockton Malone, you know, I mean, a lot of Peyton Kemp, Barkley, and they didn't really have a second crazy star, but they had Johnson and Chambers and, you know, they Marley and all that. But there are some teams that underachieved that sometimes. The Rockets, before they won, before they won and after they won, they had some stumbles in the playoffs. So this type of stuff has a better shot of happening when you have a two-star league instead of a three and four.
So would you say the Clippers are Kawhi Lou Williams? Because
I don't know.
Deserve to get mentioned currently.
Yeah, the playoff P is not doing so well. But let's start by breaking down what we just saw. The Thunder got off to a really hot start in the first chunk of minutes, and then Houston kind of caught up with them, ended up leading after the 137-35. It was a pretty tight game all the way through, 52-48 in the early, like what's like 5 minutes into the second quarter. The pace kind of slowed down, and it was 60-60 at half. And Harden, he had like 19 compared to Paul. who's, you know, has been not – he's very inconsistent in the playoffs these last couple of years, as we know. But he only had 4 points or something like that. Houston, though, God, they started out super hot. You know, considering they couldn't hit a three down the stretch, we'll talk about that being one of the main problems of why they didn't win this game. But they went on a 14-2 run in a little over 3 minutes. They were 8 for 8. It was 88-73. And we were actually saying, hey, we're sitting there texting back and forth saying, hey, if it turns out this is before the run, I said, hey, if it turns out to be a blowout, I was thinking in my head, you know, we could start the game or the show earlier. I was thinking we were going to wait to the 8 minute mark in fourth quarter just to make sure if they were way up. And I didn't think that would happen. Sure enough, big run happens. You text me. Then another big run happens. OK City. Down, they got it all the way to 15 and cut it to 1. And they kept just grinding it out, both teams down the stretch. And I'll give credit for Houston to get a lot of those two-point buckets, but 3 for 23 down the stretch before they hit a 3 there to make it somewhat interesting at the end. Houston couldn't hit a 3, which obviously that hurts them. And they put it all together, Oklahoma City, and got this win. No Westbrook, though, so I'm still pretty impressed with Houston even going into this game.
Yeah, you know, it's literally the live by the three, die by the three theory. I did think, and I believe it's Jim Jackson who was calling the game. The guy called him Jim. So I think Jim Jackson made the decent point of, you know what? And this was like with 5 minutes to go, it's like, you know, if a shooter keeps missing a shot, why not go in for a 2? And like Harden did that, like at that moment with like 2 minutes to go, and he made it. But when you literally do miss like, you know, 2 out of 12 threes within a span of, you know, a couple minutes, like you really like, you know, Houston has a small ball lineup to its favor. Like why were we not, you know, trying to just get a couple of buckets to get some rhythm? It seems almost stubborn in a way, and you know, and to their credit, it's paid off. You now have a series which is 2-2, so now you now have a best of three series with Oklahoma City. But when you hear people talk about the series, it's almost like, you know, the Thunder are like an undermanned team with like a great coach who's had a hell of a season. You know, so maybe that's true, or maybe we're, Chris, again, seeing the Mike D'Antoni, I have one plan for the playoffs, and if this plan falls apart, I don't have plan B, you know? Like, where was...
Well, part of that plan B could be Westbrook to the rack, though, if we're being fair.
Well, yeah, no, yeah, and true, you're right. And to some extent, obviously, having him on the court is another massive scoring threat. But I guess you're really telling me it's the fact that, okay, besides Harden, like, you know, Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Danilo Gallinari are out playing, like, the Houston guys, you know? And, again, I know that they shoot the three, they do it at a great clip, and mostly they're accurate. But as Jim Jackson said, it's like, guys, going for a 2. That's not saying, hey, we're not going to shoot threes anymore. Like, you know, they're going to. But I'm a freaking high school coach. But it just reminds me of games where, hey, you know, the team's in a funk. Like, it's kind of maybe like in hockey, like, let's get a garbage goal, or let's attack the net, or in football, like, you know, let's just simplify it or something. It's just they really do not have the backup plan, you know. And shit, Westbrook isn't a 3-point shooter to start with. So from that standpoint, you know, I don't know. But it just blew my mind, Chris. And now you're back into a series where people, you know, I would say had you favored, you know, because you had a 2-0 lead and, you know, you had some rhythm going and you had the confidence, and then you had a tough nail biter, maybe some bad replay luck in game 3. Now it's a 2-2 series again. And again, maybe in game 5, the Rockets hit, you know, a good chunk of threes again, but I don't know. We're back to a coin flip. Maybe Westbrook comes back. I've not heard any, I guess, positive news saying that he would. So I guess, you know, maybe it'd just be worth recommending, hey, when it gets like this, guys, let's Harden, do your thing. Like, the guy is such a prolific player, at getting fouled, you know, and so many people hate that about him, but it's true. He's a phenomenal guy going to the line to draw free throws. So if you have arguably the best player in NBA history, possibly, to get fouled and go and shoot the free throws, why not attack? Well, we got to shoot threes. You know, I don't know. I go back and forth on the strategy, but I would be very pissed off, Chris. I'll just say that if I was a Rockets fan, it's like, holy shit, how many of these we're going to miss before we, you know, go in for a layup. So that's my take. And now it's a complete coin flip because Houston's not going to change their ways. Oklahoma City's got a little more rhythm. They have Dort back to help guard Harden. What do you think's happening?
Well, a couple of things of what you said. They only got to the line 10 times, and Harden only got there 5. Now, getting to the line, that's Westbrook's bread and butter as well. But Harden could have done more of that. He did, you know, he had 32, 15 assists, too. So, I mean, that plays into it, obviously. That they may have been taking away some of his drive, and he's dishing it as well, which I did see. But when you said, well, maybe everybody else is just beating them, it's really, for Oklahoma City, it's really not that way, though. I mean, if you look at Game 2, Houston had 7 players in double figures. Game 3 and Game 4 have come down to Paul and Schrader, both of them going off. And obviously, Paul really went off for 26, considering, like I said, he had 4 at halftime. But Schroeder put in another 30, and I believe he got to 30 or at least pretty high in the 20s in the last game, too. So there's that. But here's another thing, dude. They hit 40% of their threes, Houston did. You know, they hit 23 threes, which is crazy. But they put up 58, tying the record, the playoff record that they had just set a couple, game one or something. So it is kind of crazy because if you look at the points, you know, you still had some guys in double figures. It wasn't, I mean, Green was the only guy off the bench. They shortened their bench a little bit, but you had 32, 23, 21, 14, 11, and 10 off the bench. Actually only 13 total off the bench. That was a problem. But so I really do think it does come down to that, like you said, the 3 for 23. Maybe that big, you know, 14-point run wouldn't have happened if they would have done what they did in the fourth quarter at times, and that was get those 2-point buckets to stay in the game, even though they're missing threes. Now, some of their 2-point buckets are rebounds off a missed three, so we do have to mention that too. But I don't know, because it's kind of like, I don't know how disappointed I am when you don't have Westbrook. You know what I mean? I'd be pretty happy at 2-2. Maybe wouldn't be happy right now, like you said, with that 3 for 23. But it just it really adds intrigue. And like you said, without knowing Westbrook's going to be back, how do you feel about the rest of the series here with 3 games left?
Well, you know, I heard some numbers that like the offensive difference of like points per game isn't drastically different with Westbrook. Now, it does provide you a different type of player who does make the defense adjust differently. But from a point perspective, I think as much as they jack it, you know, the points per game doesn't change. I do think that in a smaller sample size with this situation, Chris, he does benefit you. Because I think from those numbers I heard, that was like a season perspective where Westbrook on the court or off the court isn't a big dynamic difference for analytics and stats. But yes, for this 3-game sample size, clearly a guy like him on the court is needed, you know, because again, he's really not a good 3-point shooter at all. So he does give you that extra piece of, hey, I'm going to go attack the rim and get fouled and have some crazy dunks and all that crap. So I'm leaning towards Oklahoma City. I saw those stats at the end of the game where they're the best team to win clutch games, which I believe is considered to where, if it's a 5-point game with 5 minutes to go and you win, and now they're 31-15, which is the best in the NBA. So clearly Donovan and those guys have some sense of clutchness to them. I'll give some credit to Chris Paul that, you know, he's the leader of this squad. Clearly this team does not get flustered by a late game situation to where we were talking about how the Rockets are, you know, jacking up threes, maybe not having the best possessions near the end of the game. Oklahoma City did their thing, and as you said, Schroeder was really getting the line pretty easily and making some nice layups. So I'm going to lean Oklahoma City. I just think that we've seen the Rockets gameplay, and it's they're losing some rhythm now. So I'm going to lean towards Oklahoma City, especially now with that Dort guy back who did not play game one, but has really limited Harden's 3-point shooting effectiveness. I'm going to roll the dice towards OKC.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, that could have been their rhythm getting out, and then now they're going to find it the last two games too. So it's interesting. I'm going to lean to Houston. Before we get to Dallas, because that is tomorrow night, for those who are going to listen to this pod before the game tonight, because it doesn't start for another 2 hours or something like that, at 90 minutes or something like that, let's dig into this Lakers-Portland. Obviously, God, you look at some of these stats, you know, early in that game one, I mean, Portland came out gangbusters, dude. You know, it's like, here we freaking go. And just overall, if you look at the quarters, you break down the quarters of Portland, you know, like people saying, you know, Portland has played 43 quarters in the bubble. This is a couple of, days ago, or a chunk of days ago. And, when you start to see, like, beyond that first quarter and beyond, you know, what they were able to do in game one, you know, some of these quarters, this was, like I said, this is the 21st or something like that. This tweet was out there, the last six quarters, 17, 20, 19, 22, 21, 21. My point is, after that display of whatever it was, great by Portland, Lakers settling for three. That's the biggest thing. I thought that Davis, they weren't getting the ball inside to Davis. And I'm not talking about all the way inside all the time, but he got the ball out on the three-point line way too many times. Their defense struggled. And Portland started out great. Lakers got back in the game. Portland, of course, Dame hit, what, two long-ass threes. You had Trent hit a big three, and same with McCollum. And they just ended up winning that game. What was going through your head when it was, 100-something to 91 or whatever, game one, right? But the funny thing is, the first thing you hear is, what is wrong with LeBron? It's old man LeBron, which is kind of funny because – you know, it seems like every game they lose or win because he didn't have this great game the next game. So then it was like, well, look at it now, dude. This is horrendous. I mean, he had one of his worst games ever, you know. But then when you look at actually, I mean, you know, his team obviously won by what? 111, 118 or 111, 88 or something like that. And he played like – he didn't even play 30 minutes, so it is kind of funny. But when you look at that game one, considering, you know, they only had 90-some points, 91 points or whatever, was 93. I'm looking at it right now. You know, he put up 23 points in a 93-point game, and then, oh, by the way, had 16 assists and 17 rebounds. So it was kind of funny to me. For me, the Lakers just couldn't hit a freaking three to save their life, which is a weakness. They didn't play as good a defense. What were you thinking right then? Then we could talk about the last couple of games that have, you know, it seems like they featured Davis down low more. Their defense is getting better, and they finally hit some shots.
Yeah, I was obviously really happy after they won. I mean, I've enjoyed this run. Portland's always been my second team. Like, everything about them winning game one, it's like, man, this journey is going to continue. Charles Barkley's putting on like a Leonardo DiCaprio acting job with his love for Portland and getting out of Broome. I mean, everything was looking beautiful. And, you know, Lillard did his thing. McCollum with his broken back, which I really don't think he has, because despite one report, like, if the dude has a broken back, it's got to be like the lightest broken back ever, because the dude's
got to be a bone we've never heard of, you know?
Yeah.
Like, come on. Like, there's plenty of guys that are limited from backs and they didn't break it, you know,
or he's got a cortisone shot in there and it's like was the best perfect most placed cortisone shot of all time, you know,
it's from Russia, sure, or something.
Yeah. So after game one, I was ecstatic. It's like, man, you know, Barkley was right. Like, the Lakers offense is struggling. They can't shoot threes or anything. So I was obviously happy, you know, but to give credit to LeBron, he was, I believe, the first player ever. And I think I heard he had 25 points. He had 25 points and then over 15 assists and rebounds. That's the first time that's ever happened in a game for playoffs. Like, so, you know,
but there's got to be something wrong with him, though.
So, of course, LeBron haters are all out there, you know, but the dude set an NBA record for playoff history in all of NBA history. It's like, actually, dude's still okay. You know, yeah, he's not too shabby. So, obviously, was riding high after that. And again, the Lakers still have a massive three-point shooting issue. You know, and we're a couple games in now, but that still hasn't truly been resolved. And their free throw shooting's a little scary, too. But after game one, I was super happy. And then I think, you know, to get towards game two and so on.
You moved away from the...
Oh, okay. To get into the future from that point on, I really think that part of it is, like, they probably just came back down to earth a little bit. Like, the run they had in the bubble was needed because they were not at all guaranteed to make the playoffs. They had to bust their ass to make it in. Even with Memphis struggling, they still had to go 6-2 to barely sneak in. And they needed a Caris LeVert Nets miss shot to make the play-in game. You know, so I think after they won game one, there probably is some sense of reality of, like, we're playing like on a video game, like cheat code level, and you can't do that forever. And the Lakers defense is actually not that bad. You know, people talk about their offensive woes, but defensively, they've actually done pretty good. So I was super happy after game one. And I think part of that was
over the year, you could make the argument they're the best defensive team for the year, you know?
Yeah. And so I think part of it's sadly the fact now, because I love Lillard and all those guys, but I think part's the fact that, hey, you know, I'm sure LA made a couple of adjustments. You know, Lillard has not gone for 40 in a game, you know, like, he's been a little bit normal, which is nothing to be ashamed of. So I think now you've really gotten to the point where you're going to need a Lillard crazy game again with some McCollum and Melo help. And Melo's, it's nice to see him, you know, become more of a scorer like he used to be. And then you're going to need the Lakers to have another cold night from three. It's like the tide is really shifted, unfortunately, you know, but I'm also not a LeBron basher. So I'm not going to, you know, if the guy wins again, I'll give the guy more credit. But I think, Chris, the Portland fun has worn off. And hell, sure. I forget what game it was, but I almost never hear announcers say this, but I think it might've been Weber, but they're like, you know, they're like, dude, you know, Nurkic looks exhausted, and maybe it's the fact he lost his grandma. Maybe it's the fact that dude's been playing lights out, but I think Portland as a team probably needs like a 3-day off break where it's like, can we just like regroup and get our shit together again? Cause you had like an incredible 12 game run, and now you're faced against a huge, tall, lengthy team, and there's been no time for them to catch their breath, my friend.
Yeah, that's true. Like you said, they had to do so much just to get in, and you wonder if it was going to carry over, and it did for game one. Another thing with Portland game one was the defense. They were blocking a lot of shots, especially their bigs. They got some length on that team in general down low, so that kind of, you know, went away. Like I said, the heavy lifting, Davis and LeBron, especially last game, LeBron went off 38 and almost a triple-double. They get the ball, like I said, closer to the hoop. Just more, not just to Davis, which they did do, but also just getting the ball, just getting easier shots closer to the bucket in general. Not just Davis, but just in general. They got a lot more alley-oops because of all the attention off the game, you know, off of LeBron anyway, but off the two-man game that they have, that they've had those easy buckets all year long. And I think that definitely made a big thing. And like I said, they did finally hit some threes. I do still think, though, they're going to need at least – well, they're going to – I should say at least. They're going to need Rondo back because at least Bradley's not coming back. They still will need, a guy like Rondo just because he's a facilitator and he can defend. And if that's the only two things he has to do – and you can live with him taking wide open threes once in a while. But tonight, 7-point favorites. What do you think is going to happen tonight? Because we're saying all this stuff, but if Portland wins, it's a 2-2 series.
Yeah, just to, like, we'll get to the Clippers. They would be in the same boat. I do think that, you know, and this is just off what media said, but I do think that Lillard saying his thumb bothered him a little bit. Like, that's tough, just because even though in game three he had the dislocated thumb recovery, he had a great game, but still was maybe missing a couple of threes. Like, he really can't have a normal game for himself for them to win. Like, he almost has to have another 40-point explosion with some, you know, deep threes to kind of change momentum and lead to timeout calls by the Lakers. And if his thumb's bothering him even a little bit, that kind of limits his craziness to where Lillard could easily score 25 tonight. But with who they're facing, he literally has to almost be that 41 points per game thing, which is really hard to do. And my other big takeaway as to why I'm really scared for Portland going forward is there's no stopping the Anthony Davis pick and roll. Like, right, that shit's not almost even fair. So,
yeah, Whiteside had a good opening game, but then now it's been like, all right, dude, you know, that's going to stop.
Well, and it's just, you know, if you're whoever's guarding him, obviously got to defend when he screens. And whenever Anthony Davis screens, he goes to the elbow, and he's so tall that he's going to shoot over anyone. And it's just like an effortless, he almost shoots from where KG. KG had that, you know, kind of elbow mid-range shoot or shot. It's the same spot for Davis, and there's really no way to stop the pick and roll, so I'm not quite sure how you answer that. So that's a massive red flag for me, which I'm sure, obviously, Terry Stotts to me is one of the best coaches in the NBA. Like, I'm sure the guy, if he had a game plan, he would use it. So that's a massive issue. And then you have the fact that LeBron has become, like, he's been a really facilitator point guard, LeBron. He lobs up these alley-oops to McGee and Dwight Howard and Anthony Davis, and there's no answers to it. Like, Nurkic is a great
besides
big, Chris,
fouling,
you know, but Nurkic isn't fleet of foot. Nurkic can't, you know, he's not gonna quite be like a Gobert where, you know, his hands are so tall he's gonna knock off the alley-oops. Like, Portland really doesn't have a guy that can slow down the pick and roll or the constant alley-oops, and LeBron just kind of picks them apart doing that. And they kind of have to in a way because their three-point shooting hasn't been bad. But God forbid, you know, like I think it was last game, KCP had a good game of shooting threes. And, you know, there's so many different parts to Lakers offense. And Portland's defense truly isn't that great. I think they're being exposed. And like I said, if we're not having like Dame time, it's really hard for them to sneak back into the series, in my opinion.
And he was 5 of 11 from 3. And he had like 30-some
points
still. Yeah, but the other they only got 8 points off the bench in general, and the other most of the other guys struggled from the three because they didn't struggle from the three, like shot just a horrible percentage, but they need to shoot better if they're gonna win that game four. What do you think's gonna happen tonight? Do you think I do see it as a tight game though? I think the Lakers are gonna win, but it's gonna be a struggle.
Yeah, I think this Portland team is too gritty. Like, they've had too good of a run, and they're too well coached and too good to have a blowout game. But I do think that just – I think the Lakers have too many tools to pick from to dissect the Portland team. I think you need a 40-plus point Dame performance tonight for the Trailblazers to have a chance.
And, by the way, 48-42, the Heat are up. We're not going to break down a lot of those or any of those series, really, but we will look towards that. But before we do, we got two more series to break down. Then we'll just look at the matchups for the East as well here. But obviously, Dallas forcing, you know, a 2-2 tie. They ended up, we talked about how it was a 3-point. They couldn't win. They were like 2-13 or something in 3-point games. Their defense is not that good at all. But they won a 2-point game in style. Luka hit a crazy shot, and he's lifted his game so much. Well, I shouldn't say so much because he had a great year, but I get the guy is already lifted it. He's the youngest, as far as the first playoff triple double, the second youngest or third youngest and it's literally like 60 days behind. And actually, it's probably even. It's probably right with LeBron because these days are fucked up because here we are playing the playoffs in August. So it's actually right there. The guy has just been phenomenal in so many ways. But we talked about playoff P. Paul George just disabled comments on his Instagram for anyone who doesn't follow. Someone tweeted, best defense he's played so far in the playoffs, which is not good. Playoff P is not doing it. And I know this is an offensive league now. I get it. You know, some of these stats scoring-wise, like we're going to talk about the Jazz and Nuggets. I mean, how many fucking 50 points can we get? I get it, you know. It is a video game right now, but that's the NBA for the last 3 years at least. And it's not slowing down that way. So we can always talk about the stats, the NFL stats. You can look at the quarterback numbers now and go, dude, this is weird. This doesn't really fit up. Maybe there should be an asterisk. We can talk about that shit. Well, shit, there's 12 games. Now there's 16. We can talk about that shit all day. My point is, you got two damn good defenders, elite-level defenders, and it's just not slowing Luka down, and he's got this thing about him that he's not the quickest guy, but he's crafty as shit. He can get to the spot. He's not lost on defense. He still has somewhere to go there. Sure, he's a young guy, but his age, he doesn't just rely on scoring. He's an all-purpose player. He is a guy that, like you said, it is nice to pass a torch. And I'm not saying LeBron's passing the torch, but he's got, you know, at some point, LeBron's going to fall off the cliff. And that may be 20 points and 8 assists and 8 boards still, but that's falling off the bridge for LeBron, right? You know, as these years pile up. But you're going to have to pass the torch. And Luka definitely is picking that thing up and running with it. Just a crazy game last night, though, wasn't it? 137 to 135 in OT. Luka steps back from three and just cans it, dude.
And the reason I give him more props is because if I was to give Dallas 3 stars of the game, it's Luka 1 with like 5 stars. And then you have probably Tim Hardaway and Trey Burke. Or yeah, I probably flipped that. Probably Trey Burke and Tim Hardaway. So your number 2 and 3 stars who helped you win a playoff game are Trey Burke and Tim Hardaway. Because that Maxi Kleber couldn't hit shit. And Porzingis is out. So how is it, Chris, that Tim Hardaway and Trey Burke are upsetting the Vegas favorite team to win the West? It's part of this has to be a massive collapse of coaching on Doc Rivers. Or Luke is just really, really already to LeBron level. I mean, I know that's kind of some bold statements there, but obviously Luke is very hard to guard. I completely get all that, and he's going to get his. But you're literally letting those other guys like become more prominent players than Paul George. Like last night, it was the Lou Williams show, and Morris hit a couple of big shots, but you're going shot for shot with Hardaway and Burke. And not to discredit those guys, but those are not your household names. And those players are not making the salary that Paul George, you know, Marcus Morris, Lou Williams. It's truly remarkable just looking from it on paper that this series is tied 2-2. Because I'll give Luke has been the best player in the series. And I know Kawhi is a really close second there, and Kawhi still probably is a better player than Luka overall. But man, these Clippers, whether it's the coaching, maybe they can't figure out their defense or something, but something appears to be massively wrong. And, you know, it'd be one thing if Porzingis was playing and scoring, but he didn't play last game. And the Clippers were up 22 points in the second quarter. I just, maybe they got cocky. Maybe this is all just a mental, like, oh, well, you know, they're not focused. But shit, man, you're now in a 2-2 series. You're facing a guy who apparently has no issue carrying the whole team on his back. Is the Clippers defense massively overrated? Are the role players playing out of their mind? I mean, should this team really be the favorites in Vegas to win the title, Chris? Or what do you think? I know I kind of had a rant there, but it's just truly surprising that the best team in Vegas blows a 22-point lead to a one-man show with some role guys who you probably couldn't name for a fantasy basketball team.
Well, and that's what was interesting. But Porzingis, the last two games, you know, we can't say he hasn't done anything.
No, just for last game.
I'm sorry, two out of the last three. Yeah, last game, he only played 20 minutes, right, or something like that. Not much. I think it was 20 minutes or something like that. Yeah, 14 points. Or wait, no, that was game. Yeah, no, that was – I'm looking at it wrong. Because he had 34 in a losing effort against the Clippers, and then he had 23. Only seven boards, though, so like you said, he's not going nuts. That is kind of interesting. But, yeah, you know, I mean, I think that when you look at – when we say, you know, is it the one-man show? Well, okay, let's look at the game two. I'm looking at game two, 127 to 114. They had three Curry off the bench. They had a 15, 16, and 13 off the bench. Hardaway had 17. Porzingis had 23. So I wouldn't say six players in double digits is a one-man team per se. Williams, of course, off the bench, you know he's going to score, but they didn't get a whole lot of other stuff. I do think that there is some – they got to figure something out with Luka and get the ball out of his hands to an extent. I know that's harder to do nowadays, but you still got to do it. And it just seems like that he can just find his spot. Like you said, he's hard to guard, but it's because he's crafty too. I mean, that up and under Euro step last night was silly, but, you know, Leonard's doing his thing, period. He just is. It's 2-2. I mean, a lot of this has to be George. I mean, we did see years ago when Wade in the playoffs – and I'm not trying to say it's the same thing because Wade was actually not healthy, whereas I don't think that's the case with George. Wade was hurt back then. But when he was going against the Spurs, you know, those last couple of years, you know, even when they won, it was like, dude, Wade's not the same guy. Well, I think that if it's a two-star team, you do have to step up, you know. And Porzingis is actually out playing George as well. So, yeah, you're right. Defensively, they have to figure something out. Now, remember, they're going against, analytically, literally one of the best, if not the best, offensive teams. I think we should put that in there. But you got to, you know, it's a seven-game series. You had four games to look at it now. So, Doc Rivers, sure. But I also think the playoff P. I mean, that's the most thing that stands out to me.
Yeah, and it's not just a one-time thing. Like, this nickname did not occur over 3 days. Like, this has been kind of his MO that he has struggled in the playoffs consistently. And you know, and of course, he's like, then he pulls out the, well, I'm not Harden. You know, it's like, well, dude, I would just worry about your own shit. Like, you know, I don't know. It's whatever.
Well, but, ever since he left Indiana, let's put it that way. Because he was a stud in Indiana in the playoffs. But you're right. Ever since the last two years, it's been like, hey, buddy. And maybe it's his mind. I don't know what it is. But if you're not going to shoot well, then you got to lock up, you know, Luka to an extent and make him work super hard. And right now, like you said, he's making it look easy.
And being a guy who likes to gamble, I'm not sure which game I'd pick, but I do believe that this will go seven, or that maybe hell, the Clippers could even lose in six. Like I see the Mavs winning another game. I know, obviously, we're going to see, you know, crazy Kawhi, because Kawhi, again, the guy's, I think, doing all he can. He's probably pissed off with the rest of his team. But I do believe, Chris, that this will go six or seven. I do think I would have to get some good odds to bet the Mavs to win, because as we've seen LeBron have his, like, you know, switch turned on. Mind you, Kawhi led a team to knock off my boys last year, and, like, he was the best player. Well, we had some injuries, but, I mean, we're going to see, you know, five-star Kawhi, so Luka's going to do his part, too. You know, I just think it's maybe going to come down to, can the Clippers make the adjustments? And to give Dallas credit to kind of wrap up my summary here. I've kind of gone on both sides. Now, Carlisle is one of the best coaches of all time. They statistically, as you said, maybe are the best sabermetric offense of all time, and they shoot the three incredibly well.
Right.
But again, mind you, Trey Burke and Tim Hardaway are not supposed to be out playing Marcus Morris, Paul George, Montrezl Harrell. You know, the list goes on for your roster. So, I think as Luka
as a defender too. They've been missing him lately. Has it been two games? Has it been two games?
For
I just said his name. I may have broken up or something.
Oh, okay.
Why am I not thinking of his name? The fucking the guy who's out. He's oh man, I can't believe I'm
spacing. Oh, Beverly.
Yeah. Now that has to play into it lately anyway.
True.
Are they gonna get him back?
I've heard no prognosis he's coming back. Now that guy, he's the guy that everyone in the NBA hates unless he's on your team, because he is really pesky and he would do his part to at least slow down Luka or make the team an all around. He probably is too short to guard him, but
right,
he presents a factor that makes the rest of the team's defense much more effective. So I'm gonna say this thing goes 7.
He's not gonna play in 5. He's not gonna play. Yeah. He's not expected to play at all in game 5. I just followed up what you said, and you're correct. And he hasn't played. Well, he hasn't played a game, right? Yeah, he hasn't played a game. Oh no, he played the first.
He was in game 1. Yeah. So
no game. So last 3. I mean, we talked about how Rondo and you know, Bradley could make a difference. Well, like you said, he's a difference maker too in general. To know he's gonna guard, even if it's not Luka, he's on somebody, and he's around the ball being pesty, and he's an energy guy.
Yeah, he starts to nullify the Tim Hardaway or Trey Burke factor, and then all of a sudden now we're really hurting for the Mavs to score if Porzingis isn't healthy. So, for the fun of the show, I'm going to take the Mavs in 7. I think they win another game before this is over. I do not think the Clippers win out. Who the hell is on the court doesn't matter. I think that Luka is getting into Dame mode, and the guy truly is special. I'm gonna take Mavs in 7. I hope it happens. I think that'd be a great story. I think that would just help build up his name for the NBA, which it never hurts to have a guy who's just a positive image for the game. We've never heard a bad story about him for all we know. I think there's a lot of good things going in his direction. I'll take Mavs in 7 because if PG-13 stays like this or whatever, my favorite one was playoff a Bible verses. Someone on Twitter, I forget who is, some random dude was like, "Oh, you know, it's like Paul 3:14 or Paul 3:16." Right. It was pretty clever. If he keeps that up, he's gonna have a rude awakening over the summer, and it'd be really great to see the Mavs advance.
Yeah, Paul 4:16. That is funny. I like that. But I think playoff P will come to play. But I'm going with game. I think it'll be 7 as well. But I am gonna go with the Clippers. And Luka though is even more all purpose. Dame's just a different player, but Luka's more all purpose though. I'll say that. So when we talk about Dame mode, it's like, well, then what's Luka in LeBron mode then? No, not really, because he still needs a little bit more defensive seasoning to call him LeBron and all that type of stuff. But
either way,
who gives a shit? We know he's a top 5 player. And that top 5 player fucking list is really about 10 deep, dude. 12 deep, I swear to God. It really is. It's literally about 8 guys in the top 5 that you can make an argument for. Let's keep it moving, though, here. The Jazz Nuggets. Been a really fun series. No doubt about it. Obviously, Donovan Mitchell has been just going, hey, I got you. 51 points in the last one. What was it, 18 in the fourth quarter? Now, Murray's been going off, too. In game 4, he got 50 points. But the biggest thing is Denver defense. Game 2, giving up 51% from the field. Game 3, 51% from the field. Game 4, we're going to get better? No, Marshall. We're going to give up 57% from the field. Mitchell has just been like, hey, remember me in the playoffs. Remember our squad in the playoffs. And it's been a little head-scratching at times, I'd have to say, for Denver. They had this young team 2 years ago. The Timberwolves kicked them out of the playoffs. They had a great year last year. What's going on?
I'll keep this recap a little bit shorter because it's really simple. Their defense is atrocious. I know that we've broken down numbers, and we said the Lakers had issues on offense in the bubble our last podcast. This podcast, I'll say, and it's true, the Nuggets have the worst defensive team in the bubble. I think they've had almost every game go over, which means from a betting standpoint, they're going over the total points every game. And part of it's due to the fact that Murray and Jokic can score offensively, but their defense is super, super bad. Michael Porter, the kid from Mizzou, who I love, like, doesn't play defense. The Donovan Mitchell pick and roll with Gobert has not been stopped by anyone in Denver. And to give Utah credit, they've been shooting lights out from three. Like, if they're taking the Houston approach, I'd like to see them play, because, like, Ingles and Donovan and my boy Jordan Clarkson from Mizzou, like, everyone is making shots on Utah, so they are hitting crazy buckets. But when you have teams in the NBA who are shooting 58% from the game and from a three-point line at some point in the game, that's really shitty defense. Like, Klay Thompson and Curry normally have to, like, work really hard to shoot, like, over 50% in games, and the Jazz are doing this almost consistently. So I think it's too late, Chris. I wish I'd bet this going into the series, because Denver, it was pretty much a pick 'em. I think Denver was barely favored. Like, I missed the boat here. But game one, Donovan Mitchell has the hiccup. You know, he has an 8-second violation count. Murray and Jokic go off in OT. And since then, since game one, Utah is averaging close to 124 points a game. That's it. 124 points a game. That's it.
Yeah,
I got nothing else.
Crazy. It is crazy. Okay, so let's keep it going here. The first game on the other side. Sorry about that. The first game on the East, as far as game one, will be Thursday, Celtics Raptors, and it does kind of seem like if you see it lined up the next day, it'll probably be the Bucks in the Heat, more than likely Friday. But that's obviously, we got to figure out. That's just a guess. It could be earlier, too. It's tough to say. They still got to play. Obviously, tonight, one of them might be wrapped up. But Milwaukee still technically has, Wednesday? And they should close it up. But you never know, I guess. But let's look at the one for sure. Right now, it's 5:30 Central Time on a Thursday. And by the way, this afternoon basketball, especially the playoffs, but ever since it started in the bubble, tell me you're not getting NCAA vibes from it, dude.
I forget who it was. I've heard many people say, like, from now on for the playoffs, you need to have daily NBA and hell, even daily NHL. The NHL putting games at 10 o'clock at night is fucking so dumb right now with all this time to first. But yes, NBA daily playoff games are beautiful. Like, I don't think, even if obviously next year we'll be out of this pandemic, hopefully, I think that the daily playoff games are just a must. Your ratings are crushing it. Even with people back to work, you can always stream on your phone or, like, computer,
why they wouldn't do it. Monday through Thursday and Friday, they're not crushing during the day, though.
You're right. Maybe the TV's
like, yeah, go fuck yourself. They're like, no, we don't want to do that, but it is awesome, dude.
It is. And speaking of TV and money, I'm really curious, Chris, because I've heard both sides. I've been listening a lot to Vegas pods and different people who claim to be experts. Sometimes they offer shitty picks for gambling, but moving on. I've heard both perspectives of who should be favored in the series. Personally, if it's even close, which I think it will be, I'm going to bet that Toronto wins the series. I think they're a more well-developed, better playing team of late, but I'm sure you could have someone make the same exact points for Boston. I think this should be a really fun series to watch. Again, people, it's a 50-50 coin flip. I know I've said that a couple times tonight, but I think even from a Vegas gambling perspective, I think a lot of people would have the series go both ways. At very most, the team would be like a minus 125 favorite to win the series. So you're going to have a if you feel good about one team, bet a lot because it's going to be almost an even money payback. I think Toronto's look smoother. I think they're obviously the more experienced team. They lose Kawhi and they don't miss a beat. They had the coach of the year. Hayward's out for the Celtics. I'm leaning Toronto. I think they've had a little more of a rhythm. But this should this on paper should be a really evenly matched series, Chris, and it should be a lot of fun compared to what we've seen so far in the East.
Yeah, you're right. And just even tonight, Boston, or that night, Thursday night, literally it's like the spread is, you know, plus 1.5, minus 1.5, minus 110. Like you can find, yeah, minus 120 on Moneyline odds on FanDuel. Like it is razor close. And we said it at, you know, the last show about 8-9 days ago or whatever, and props to Toronto. Like, it's crazy that they came back to this spot and were able to do what they did this year. They just have a deep team. They have a star that developed into that, I have to say, right? But they have, like, from your second best to whatever, eight or what, you know what I mean? Like, they can just get so much contributions, and they spread the ball, and they're just a blast to watch. But talent for talent on paper, Celtics should win. They really should. They got three freaking 20-point scorers. They should play better defense, I'd say. But like you said, the Raptors just – they're just freaking good, and they have that confidence. That swagger from last year has to help. So I am going with the Raptors, but honestly, even going into this, you know, knowing where they were before the bubble, seeing them in the bubble, whatever, all that stuff, I still felt like, well, I think the Celtics are going to win. But now that we're here, I'm going Raptors too, dude. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked, but damn, they just find a and imagine if they had home court advantage, because we know their fucking fan base is just out of control, and you know that they have a notch up this year based off what they did last year, right? You know their playoff. If I mean, imagine how many people will be outside that building.
Oh,
you know. But I'm right there with you. Now the other side of it, assumingly, is Toronto or not Toronto? I'm sorry, Milwaukee and Miami. And Miami's a squad where you're like, dude, this is for real. And it's the third season in a row Butler has done this now. Minnesota hadn't been in the playoffs since, you know, 04, 05, go to the playoffs. And as we say here a bunch, or at least I do because I'm a Timberwolves fan, down the stretch of those 20 games, you know, there's no way if Butler even made half of them that they wouldn't have had that third seed. There's just no way. They were only two games away from it with no Butler down the stretch. So there's just no fucking way. And then last year, right at the fucking, you know, they needed a fucking three to leak in. Or not a three, but you know what I'm saying, with that Leonard shot. And I mean, this fucking, this is crazy, dude. And Miami has cap room, you know what I mean, for next year and the years coming. They're in a great spot, but do you think Milwaukee's just going to grind it out and get it done? Or is Miami this upstart that you just – they just found, almost like Toronto last year, where they got a legit star, and they're just finding a way to get contributions from a lot of people.
I think that Miami is a deeper team. I think that maybe statistically speaking, Milwaukee might be better. I do think one interesting thing is going to be that Milwaukee's defensive theory is to pack in the paint, and this is just simple basketball 101, trying not to confuse people, but they don't like to give up layups, which obviously is really effective of a defensive strategy because they also have crazy long length with Antetokounmpo. But the Heat are really good shooting the threes. So I'm not really going to really worry about what the hell the Magic did. They had injuries, and that really wasn't even much of a game or a series. But if you're going to let Duncan Robinson and like Hero just like jack up threes, like I don't – that's going to be – an issue. I know that, I mean, Miami beat Milwaukee during the regular season. I think they enjoy passing the ball. They love setting picks. I think they're really maybe an offense, Chris, that's meant to challenge Milwaukee. And this is true. And again, I'm copying what NBA people say, but Milwaukee really doesn't have an offense when people block the paint for the Greek Freak. Like when people kind of just put a wall and do what they do to other teams, like Milwaukee's offense has had issues when you lose game one to the Magic, when you lose the 15 point game to the Nets. I know that, you know, it was a bubble game, but still, like, Milwaukee's had signs of like, this team offensively doesn't quite have a rhythm when the Greek Freak can't get going. So I'm taking Milwaukee. My buddy's got a bet with another friend of ours that if the Miami, he made this bet a while ago, but quickly, if the Miami Heat make the Eastern Conference Finals, he owes my buddy a free bar tab for a year. So if Miami makes the finals, anytime he takes out my buddy, it's free drinks for the year. He made that bet jokingly drunk, but a bet's a bet. So all pulling for the Heat to make the Eastern Conference Finals so one buddy can pay my other buddy free drinks for a year. So I'm going Heat, man.
I'm
going
to be an alcoholic for the rest of the year. You know what I mean? Like, I don't give a shit. I'm cashing in, dude. And they beat them 2 out of 3 times. Miami beat them this year. Now, I'd have to go back and make sure everybody was in the lineup, of course. But it kind of stood out that the one game that they did win is when they put up 130 points. Huh, weird, you know?
Yeah, I don't think this will be a blowout. I think that it should be fun. Again, you have a savvy veteran coach in Spo. I'm sure NBA people would say that Budenholzer is a better coach, but I mean, you got to look at Spoelstra's track record. He's proven more. Maybe at this point, Budenholzer has a lot of love, but Spoelstra will not get, you know, out coached. He might not win, but he's going to have a good game plan set up. And again, if the Bucks offense struggles and they let Miami shoot the threes, this should be a really, really fun series. I hope Miami wins for personal reasons, but I think it should be entertaining basketball. Hell, both the Eastern Conferences should be really good semifinals, Chris. But I hope the Heat win. I'll go Heat in 6.
God dang, I can't believe this is happening. Wow. And they didn't make it last year either, Milwaukee, when they should have. I'm going to go Miami in 7. Jesus Christ. Maybe it's just the Butler thing. I don't know. But, yeah, you broke it down very nicely. I'm going in 7. Any last words before we get out of here, sir? You can take us home.
Yeah, as we wrap up this nice hour of talk, I'll finish it how I started it. If you have the time, watch Luka. The kid is special. He's actually bigger than I thought. The dude's actually kind of built like a truck. He's a fun basketball player to watch. Kawhi's going to bring out his game. Do yourself a favor. Again, try to watch the Dallas Clippers game. Hopefully Dallas can win 5 and win 6. That would be a very, very fun podcast in the next week to do if the Clippers are sent home and the Twitter parade begins. Until then, stay safe, wear a mask, and make sure to get out and vote. We're about less than 2 months away. So y'all have a good, safe night. The boys are out. Peace.